Our next guest has spoken to us regularly about the horrors of what is happening in Gaza. His focus primarily is the impact it's having on children. James Elder, global spokesperson for the UN Children's Agency UNICEF, joins us again. And this morning he is in Gaza. James Elder, you're very welcome back to Morning Ireland. Where in Gaza are you?
Audrey, hey there. Good morning. I'm on the edge of Khan Yunis, Al Mawasi. I mean, evacuation zones change here all the time, so there's a lot of gunfire here. I think there is, again, a lot of people in tents are going to be forced to move again. So there's a palpable level of fear because your viewers, Audrey, people go camping for a week. Imagine a year in a tent, and it's the fifth time, and now again they look like they're being forced to move under gunfire and tanks.
And where would they move to? Where's left?
Who knows? We've hopefully debunked the idea that anywhere is safe in Gaza, because in those self-declared safe zones by the IDF, we've seen people burnt in their tents. So they don't know. We don't know. It's extremely unclear. I mean, right now, the whole place is a combat zone. People are forced to go to these militarized spaces in the south, and they're combat zones. We see mass casualty events where people are trying to get boxes of food. So, yeah, until the guns fall silent, until those with leverage do something here. But no, for children, for families, absolutely nowhere is safe.
Would you say every single person in Gaza is suffering?
Oh, this, no doubt. I've never seen anything like it. I meet some of the most extraordinary people, Audrey. Yesterday, a family who I've known since I encountered their young daughter in her 20s in November. They're all medical students or doctors or engineers. They've lost their home. They've been displaced 5 times. They went back. They rebuilt above the rubble. They were in tears as they dragged out, you know, a photo album or a doll for the grandchild under the rubble. When I met them, and they are so highly articulate, the depression, the despair, they talk of the humiliation of lining up day after day to get a simple meal. These are the best of the brightest of any family I've met anywhere on the planet. There's no exaggeration. There's every single child in this place needs mental health support. It's night after night of bombardment. They see there's not a child here who doesn't know someone who's been killed, who hasn't seen the most ghastly, ghastly wounds. And as I'm learning this mission, Audrey, you don't just see it, you hear it. I mean, I've seen things in hospitals I can't erase, but now I'm hearing that child who's, you know, got shrapnel through their stomach or is about to have a leg amputated, and the lack of painkillers means you don't just see what's happening to girls and boys here, you hear it.
And the impact of not having enough food to eat. We have seen pictures on TV of some children. They look like children who are living in a famine.
Yeah, it's a very important thing. The world, it's almost a dangerous game here. Every time the world's most reputable body on nutrition says how close, you know, the portion of this population is to famine, then authorities just loosen the noose a little bit and a bit of aid is allowed to come in. And then when international attention dissipates, it's tightened once more. When famine hits, it will be too late. Famine is a statistical definition that means mass death. Starvation is different. Starvation is when the body starts eating itself, when you get cognitive decline. Starvation's happening here right now. Children's bodies are not waiting for some, you know, global declaration.
And those who are becoming increasingly ill through malnutrition, do the hospitals, are they able to treat them? Do they have the medicines and what they need to treat them, to help them?
No, without a doubt. I've seen children a couple of days ago in Nasser Hospital who are severely malnourished, who will probably not be alive in a day or two if they haven't already passed away. Key thing as well with severe acute malnutrition, two things. One is, malnutrition was not in the Gaza Strip. We've literally in late 2023, as the first blockade occurred, were going to hospitals and medical experts, giving them that training and detection of malnutrition, because it was completely absent from Gaza. The other thing is that when you have a child who's severely malnourished, what kills them is diarrhea, a simple disease. They're 10 times more likely to die from that. So that's what will be killing these children. It's killing them now. And I guess that it's good, again, I mean, you can't go past the people of Ireland in terms of their engagement on this, but so much of the rest of the world, Audrey, they focus now a little bit on the malnutrition, the enforced starvation of a population, but suddenly the daily killing of girls and boys seems to be something that people don't dwell on. When the killing of so many kids ceases to shock, then, you know, we've gone beyond living in a tragedy. We're complicit in it.
Yeah, I have a question here. Has the world become desensitized to the horrors of children being killed and maimed?
I think so. I think so. And I give a complete pass to everyday people who I see from campuses to old people's homes who are outraged and have immense solidarity for what's happening here. World leaders, though, to normalize, you know, 4 or 5 days ago, I was at a hospital that suffered 3 drone attacks on hospitals. That's normalized. Sitting with a little girl who's now had a double amputation at her hips. Oh, there's hundreds and hundreds of children who've had amputations and we don't have wheelchairs for and who will die without medical evacuation and medical evacuation is denied. That's normalised. You know, attacks on where children are meant to be safe or just the deliberate denial of humanitarian aid, understanding that starvation of a weapon of war is a war crime. That's not a supposition. It's just a war crime. If that was to be the case, normalised. So yeah, it's abhorrent what's happening here. I think what's somehow equally despairing, Audrey, is that when I speak, as my privileged role, it allows me to listen to so many Gazans. They're aware of solidarity, but they're aware also that to them, things are meaningless right now because those with power, as someone said to me just yesterday in the family tent in Derrybala, they either don't know, in which case they need to tune in, or they do know and they don't care.
What are you hearing, James, about what is happening at these food distribution points in southern Gaza, where dozens of Palestinians have been killed by Israeli troops in the last couple of weeks as they queued in what can only be described as a process with zero dignity involved, a dehumanizing process for Palestinians who have to queue, who are starving, who are queuing for the smallest of handouts? What are you hearing about what is taking place there?
Well, spot on, Audrey, word for word. And as the grandfather said to me yesterday, why they have a democracy in their family. They vote. Do we move again? Do we give up what we've done? Do we send the boys, you know, the adult boys down to this fight? He said, no, because, you know, we starve here or we starve by going down there and risk getting shot because same people get the food time and time again. It's chaos. They've had a week of operation. There's been 5 mass casualty events. I met a little boy in hospital, 13-year-old boy, whose dad gave him money to buy bread, the family food for the day, but he saw people moving en masse. He thought, this is my moment. I go home with a box to my starving mum and sisters, and tank fire ripped through and he's got shrapnel all through his stomach and his spleen and, again, he's got no painkillers. So yes, it's chaotic. There's contradictory information all the time and, most importantly, it's seeking to supplant an aid system that works. And I don't mean just in Sudan or Yemen or every war zone since World War II. I mean 2 months ago during a ceasefire when UNICEF had hundreds of distribution points. That's what aid is. You go to where people need it. You don't ask the elderly to walk 30 miles to a place where boxes are thrown and the IDF, which I can hear now. I can hear shooting now. I don't know who it is. I can hear shooting now. UNICEF was going door to door to reach malnourished children. None of that is occurring. So there's this very dangerous move right now to get rid of aid agencies and those on the ground and replace with this militarized zone where it's determined who gets food. Remembering, I guess, of course, that humanitarian aid is so much more than food. You know, it's hygiene kits, it's obstetric kits, it's incubators, it's wheelchairs, it's blankets, it's vaccines, it's everything not in these boxes.
James Elder, Global Spokesperson for UNICEF. Many thanks indeed joining us live from Gaza, Khan Yunus in Gaza this morning. It's 8:22.